Hi, I'm Heather. I'm an alcoholic. It's a really good thing John didn't tell me how big this room was before I got here. Miles did such an amazing job thanking everybody and saying best wishes to the birthday people, so I will just say ditto to what he said. Let's see, my sobriety date, January 12th, 1991, at least the last one. Like most of you guys, it took me a couple of tries to get here, but so far, one day at a time, I've managed to stay. So, what it used to be like. I am kind of the middle child. I'm my mom's youngest and my dad's middle child. And I had an older brother, 2 years older than me, and he didn't start talking until after I did, so that's when my parents knew something was wrong. And turns out that he was mentally retarded. So when I was growing up, I still think he's more autistic than mentally retarded because he's a genius in some ways. But when I was growing up, I was always the one helping him instead of him being the older brother to me. And I learned pretty young how evil people can be because they used to call him a lot of names at school, on the playground, that sort of thing. And he was the freak. I was the freak sister. And it was, I didn't realize at the time, as a matter of fact, I was just telling someone, it didn't dawn on me until just about a year and a half ago that that's where my issues began, was learning very early in second grade that the only way to survive was not to feel. And that was tough. It was tough until I was about 11 years old. And then someone offered me a drink and some pot. And that was the answer to all my problems. You know, I didn't have to think, I didn't have to feel anymore. I just had to stay, you know, as messed up as possible. So, you know, I was always kind of the goody two-shoes. And let me tell you, watch out for the goody two-shoes. We used to shoplift the booze from Vaughn's, and we'd go sit behind. I grew up in Solana Beach, Del Mar area, wealthy area. Mom was very poor, raising two kids on $4 an hour, and my dad wasn't paying child support. So, you know, I was surrounded by a lot of really wealthy people, and, you know, we really didn't have a pot to piss in. But I was raised by two very well-educated parents who couldn't stand each other, but, you know, they didn't drink, they didn't do drugs, they didn't do all the things that, you know, I was raised by goody two-shoes, and they used to call me a goody two-shoes when I was a kid. But when I was drinking and doing other things, I was, for the first time in my life, I was accepted by a group of people, and they actually thought I was kind of cool, and they didn't care what my brother was and any of that sort of thing. And so that's what made me, you know, gave me the attention that I had wanted for so many years earlier, and I couldn't get it. And so anyway, that's kind of where it started. And when I was about, right about that same time, 11, 12 years old, somewhere in there, my mom took my brother and I, and we learned how to square dance. I told you there was goody two-shoes in there. And so square dancing became something we did as a family, okay? Well, one year, my mom shipped me off to my dad's, who was at that point living up in Washington State, and to help us learn and meet people in the neighborhood, my dad took us square dancing. He found someone who lived close to his house, she was a square dance caller, and got us involved. Well, the kids in this very rural town in southeastern Washington that square danced were major partiers. And so, you know, that just fed the drinking and the drugging and, you know, very quickly added sex to the equation. And, you know, I'm getting all this attention from all these people. I was really cool because I was from California, you know, and they'd never met a Californian before, you know. And so that was my life, you know, 12, 13, 14. By the time I got to high school, I went to Torrey Pines High School in Del Mar, which in the late 70s, early 80s had a smoking section. Well, guess who hung out in the smoking section? All the partiers. So, you know, my habits continued. I learned that you could skip class and, you know, go party and then come back for class. And, I mean, I learned all kinds of things from those kids out there in the smoking section. But somewhere in junior high, I got into playing a musical instrument. So I was also in the marching band. So marching band folks are pretty goody-two-shoes, huh? Yeah. When I was a sophomore, my claim to fame was I corrupted almost all the freshmen who went to Mexico City. We'd been invited down to play for the music conservatory down there, and we had all these freshmen. Boyfriend and I had snuck a bunch of pot down there, and, you know, even at 14, 15 years old, you could go down to Pizza Hut and order a pitcher of beer, and they'd bring it to you. So I slightly remember the Ballet Folklorico before I got sick and almost passed out, because we had spent the evening at Pizza Hut, and probably, you know, a table full of us went through about five or six pitchers of beer at, you know, 15. We knew we had to smoke all the pot we had with us because we didn't want to get busted coming back across the border. So yeah, I'm a goody-two-shoes. I was in the band. I know how to square dance. And you know what? My parents never knew. They didn't know I smoked cigarettes. They didn't know I drank. They didn't know I did drugs. Somehow I managed to hide it all because I was that sweet, you know, good kid. I went to class for the most part. I did what my parents thought I should be doing. And so as long as I could lie and manipulate my way around what I was really up to, all was well. All was well with the world. And so I was very good at it. I can still be a little bit manipulative today, but I'm sure that surprises you. So I actually figured out in high school that I really didn't like my first and second period, and I really didn't like my fifth and sixth period. But third and fourth were either marching or concert band and jazz band, and those were pretty cool. So I would go, you know, often do my thing in the morning to prepare for school during my first couple of periods. And then I'd show up at school for third and fourth period, and then I'd leave again to go finish, you know, what I needed to do to survive the rest of the day. And the school finally noticed that I only showed up for third or fourth period, and I never showed up for anything else. So they sent a stack of papers, about almost a half a ream thick, home to my mom, of notes with her signature on it that she'd never seen before. And it said that I hadn't been going to class almost all semester, and so I convinced my mom that I was bored to tears and that I needed to test out of high school. I was a junior, and that I just wanted to go straight on to college. I was bored. School was boring. You know, they weren't teaching me anything because I already knew it all. And, you know, so mom let me test out. Well, at the time, the California proficiency test, you know, I don't know, it was pretty darn easy. I don't know if the GED's harder or if I was just too smart for my own good at the time. But I tested out in November. I left my junior year, and by January, I was going to Mesa College. Most people at Mesa didn't believe I was 16. I had to prove it to them with my driver's license. But I quickly figured out who the party animals were and became friends with most of them. I did manage to get an AA degree before the partying got me in trouble. I managed to transfer to San Diego State, but I chose two roommates that were not in school. They were cocktail waitresses. And the party started at 2 a.m. when they got home from work. And so, you know, my classes were a really good time to catch up on some sleep. And San Diego State put up with that for about a semester and a half, and then they suggested I might want to leave. And so I did. But I didn't tell my parents why I was leaving school, so they didn't really know. I can't even remember now what the lie was that I told them, but they bought it. So the partying continued. I moved down to, well, first I moved in with my dealer because, you know, that's the best place to go when you need a place to live. At the time I thought a sawed-off shotgun over the fireplace was just normal decorations. I didn't know better. But shortly after that, the neighbors complained that there was too much traffic in and out of our condo, and so they evicted us. So I moved to Mission Valley with this guy that I had met when I was living out by state. He'd come to purchase some things off me and my roommates for his mother, and he kind of never left. So we moved in together down in Mission Valley, and I'd go to work every day, and he'd go into the neighbors' houses while they were at work and see what he could find, because working kind of got in the way of his partying. But, you know, burglary was, you know, in and out pretty quick, and then you just had to find a way to sell it or get the checks cashed that he was stealing or whatever, so he could go buy whatever it is that we needed when I got home from work so we could, you know, party. But I did always manage to keep a job. That was the goody two-shoes in me. Shortly after that, the police came to the door one night, and believe it or not, they were there because he had a warrant in Northern California, and so they invited him to go back to Northern California and take care of that. So he did, and a couple weeks after he left, the manager of the apartment complex came and mentioned that we were a couple months behind on rent. Don't know where the money went. That we were going to have to, I was going to have to leave. And so I ended up moving home with my mom, who swore that I'd never be allowed back home, but she took me anyway. I think I had about 3 months to get my crap together and get back out. But while I was home with mom, I realized I was pregnant. And here I was, 20 years old. My boyfriend at the time was in jail in Placer County. And I didn't have a job because I'd lost my job. That one I lost not because of alcohol and drugs, though. I lost it just because my position had been eliminated. I'd been a student worker, and if you're not a student, they eliminate your position. I did get on with the temp agency and I was working for the county when I was a student worker. So I got on with the temp agency that the county hired from, and I worked with them for a couple months, and then I got this call for an interview. And it was an interview with this county department that I had never heard of, called the county marshal. And turns out they're the ones that serve eviction notices. So anyway, I went in for the interview, and on the way out, I'm trying to figure out if any of the deputies were the ones that served me that eviction notice. But they hired me. I still haven't figured that one out. But back then, in 1986, they didn't do background checks on civilian personnel. They just, you know, you had all the right skills, so they hired me. I was an intermediate clerk typist. And I did that, and I worked my way up a couple of promotions and one reclassification, all the while partying. And, you know, I was up for days on end. I still managed to keep my job. But after about 3 years, I had a boss come to me, and she's all, "You have a drinking and a drug problem, don't you?" And I'm like, "Yeah." She says, "I think either you need to go tell the lieutenant or I'm going to." Okay. So I went and told the lieutenant, and I guess I was a good enough worker that they didn't immediately fire me. I still haven't figured that one out. But they let me go to Kaiser's outpatient program as long as I had a counselor that would report my progress, that I was getting better, I was getting well. And so I went to Kaiser's outpatient program for a while. They kept talking about this thing called AA, NA, all the other programs. I didn't really know what they were at the time because I knew nothing about recovery at all. And so That lasted for about 9 months or so. I was still going to Kaiser, and I decided, you know, it had been a while, and I was good, and that I could go out and party this next weekend and still, you know, be back to work on Monday, and nobody would know. And so I did that for about 3 months. And I remember being called into the marshal himself's office. It had been a year, and the captain congratulated me for being well. And my counselor said I was cured and they no longer needed to follow me, and, you know, my job was safe, and, you know, congratulations. I remember going, yes, you know, and so I went out and celebrated. 'Cause that's what we do. During that 3 year time, when I got evicted and my boyfriend went to jail, my daughter was born, we ended up getting married, because you know you're supposed to do that when you're pregnant with child. And I couldn't figure out why my mom wore chocolate brown and stood in the corner for the wedding, but she did. I think she was in mourning. It rained that day, should have been a sign, but it wasn't. So anyway, 3 weeks after I had my daughter, he decided that he had this nice check that had somehow mysteriously appeared, and he needed to cash it. And so he asked me to run him down to the local check cashing place. And, you know, me being as ignorant as I possibly could, didn't really realize what was going on. And we got in there, and all of a sudden I hear the door behind us lock shut. And they weren't going to let us out. And within a few minutes, the police showed up. It was a welfare check that he was trying to cash. And, of course, he didn't look anything like the female's name that was on the check. So they got a little suspicious. So I can say I've been handcuffed, and I've gotten to ride in a San Diego Police Department car to the station, and somehow my job never found out about it, but I didn't tell him where I worked. So, but they convinced me that if I convinced him to admit that he had stolen this check, that they'd let me go. Well, I was breastfeeding at the time, and it had been several hours since I'd been near the baby, so I was kind of desperate to get back to the baby, and so I begged and pleaded, and he copped to the check, and they let me go home. And he went to jail. And the first 4 years of my daughter's life, he was a free man about 13 months of it. He would be home for a couple of months, then he'd go away, he'd get 2 years, he'd serve a year, come home. We'd party for 6 months. He'd get busted again. He'd go away for another year. Well, the second time he went away, my daughter's getting a little older, and I told him, when you come home, we cannot drink. We cannot do drugs. We have to be good. He's like, oh, yeah, because, you know, how many promises you get when you make when you're behind bars. So he did that. He made one or two promises, and I think he was home almost 7 days before we were partying again. And so within a very short period of time, I was going to work every day. He was taking care of the baby because work was still beneath him. And I get this phone call that his probation officer had stopped by the house, and that he was in custody, and my mother-in-law had the baby, and, you know, here I am at work. So I ended up going home that day. I packed all my bags, I grabbed my daughter, and I left. And I called a friend of mine that I used to party with that I had known had gotten clean, and he'd been clean and sober for several days or several years, and that was January 12, 1991. So when I tried to do it for my job, and because I got caught, it didn't work. But when I finally decided to do it for me, it did. Funny how that works. And I've had people over the last, you know, several years ask me, you know, how can I convince so-and-so to quit doing what they're doing? And I said, you can't. You know, you just can't. Yeah, I know interventions work from time to time, that sort of thing, but it sure didn't work for me, you know, because I didn't want to do it because you were telling me to do it. I wanted it, you know, when I finally got here and stayed here, it was because I wanted to be here. So there I was. My daughter was not quite four yet. And my friend had taken me to a meeting every day for a week. I was living down, by then I was living down in South Bay, down in Nestor. I spent about 10 years in Chula Vista and then moved down to Nestor near Imperial Beach. I just completely lost my train of thought. So I got to meet all these really great people, and I knew where to go every day of the week. And I was so desperate at that point to not go back to that lifestyle that, you know, I was done. I'd done step one the day I picked up that call, or picked up the phone and made that call. And I can't say that it's been all hunky-dory. I mean, I was 11 years old when I first found alcohol and drugs. So when I finally got sober at 25, I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what I believed in. I had no morals. I had no values. I did whatever I needed to do to survive. And if you needed me to be a Republican and you needed to be a Democrat all in the same day, no problem, I could do that. And I was a doormat. And it was really, really challenging to me early in the program to know who I was. And, you know, you guys told me that I should stay out of a major relationship for a year, so I waited a week. I met my current husband after that first week. Now, granted, we didn't get married for a few years, but anyway, he had 3 years, I had a week, you know. So things I've learned since I've gotten here is, one, wait a year. I don't recommend doing what I did. I don't know. I guess it's the rebel in me. It was, you know, everything people told me not to do, I had to go try it first and make sure that it wasn't the right thing to do. And most of the time they were right, but I didn't figure that out. So don't make any other major changes in your life. So 3 weeks sober, I went back to school. I had to go back to I ended up going to City College because I was still working for the marshal's office downtown in the courthouse. They just didn't know that I'd only been sober for 3 weeks instead of a year and 3 weeks. Well, actually, it was about a year and a couple of months, but I managed to keep my job. And since then, I was promoted a couple more times. I got to the point where I was managing the office, and then the marshal merged with the sheriff, and here I am, this full-blown alcoholic addict working in law enforcement with an ex-husband who's still currently in jail. But you know what? I got to join the peer support team for the department and help a lot of other people because alcoholism is rampant everywhere in all professions. And I was very open about it. And luckily, you know, I hear a lot of people talk at meetings that they can't really talk about their isms at work. And maybe out of stupidity, I always have. And it's given me a lot of opportunities to help other people. But I went back to school. I finally got my bachelor's degree. I was on the 17-year plan. With that little four-year break when I was, it was actually like a two-year break between having the baby and getting back to school back then. But I've had a son in recovery who's never seen mom or dad drink. Unfortunately, he's made a few challenging choices, and I now have a pothead that lives in my house. And, you know, I've dragged him to meetings till he was in his early teens and thought he knew better than that. But, you know, anyway, we're working on that. He's the baby. He's 17. The other two, we have the his and the mine. They're both out of the house. One we're saving a chair for. He can't figure out why Cox Communications fired him back in March, but maybe it's because he never showed up for work because he always had hangovers. So he hates the world. Everybody's against him. And when he decides that it's not everybody else and it's him, we'll have a chair waiting for him in a meeting. And then my daughter, who was always anti-smoking, anti-drinking, anti-everything, she ended up having a baby when she was 17, but you know what? She's 23 now. My grandson's 5. She went back to school and became a registered dental assistant, and she's doing great. And I look at her and I go, there's the miracle. Because with me and her father, who's in her 23 years, the man has been a free man for almost 3 years. In the 23 years, he's currently serving a 30-year sentence because he pled guilty because he was really innocent, but they were going to throw the three strikes law at him if he didn't. So he copped to it just so he could only get 30 years instead of life. I'm going, you're going to be 69 years old when you get out of prison. What? That's life to me. Anyway, so no one else will answer his calls, so he calls my house collect because we're the only ones stupid enough to say yes. And then, you know, my husband, he's got 3 years on me in the program, but... you know, he's had a lot of physical and other mental challenges that I used to spend a lot of time on my little pity pot in recovery going, you know, poor, poor, pitiful me. I have a husband who can't work because one, he's bipolar and nobody wants to, he doesn't play well with others. And so nobody really wants to work with him or have them work for him or have him work for them. And so I'm the one that has to go to work every day, and I'm the one that brings home the bacon, and I do this and I do that. And a couple of months ago, someone said to me, you know what, I had just come back from a trip to Atlanta for a week to give one of my girlfriends a 20-year token in the program, and then got to spend another week in San Antonio. Unfortunately, I had to leave the day that the AA convention started, but... did get to meet a few alcoholics because they started converging on the city a couple days beforehand. By the time I left on Thursday, you couldn't even walk down the sidewalk without bumping into all of them. They were everywhere. So, but, you know, I just come back from a trip to two different cities. I was leaving in a week to go spend some time in Park City, and I've got a trip coming up in October that's going to take me to the, you know, Egypt and Israel and Jordan for 17 days. And I'm on my little pity pot going, poor, poor, pitiful me. And one of my friends says to me, you are just so lucky. You know, you have a great job. I don't work for the sheriff anymore, by the way. I had 21 years in, and someone that I met through that job called me and offered me a position that was a $20,000 raise a year, and I said, you bet, where do I sign? So I have been out of the law enforcement arena a couple of years. But anyway, you know, I've got a great job. I love my new job. You know, I have a roof over my head because somewhere around 6 years sober, a realtor that... was introduced to my husband and I, who was in the program, and knew a finance manager who's in the program, connected us, and they said, and we said, you know, we have a bankruptcy, we, you know, have this and that, and they said, are you sober? We said, yes. We told them how long. They said, we'd love to take a chance on you, and they did. And so, you know, I have a house I've been in for almost, well, 14 years. And if you'd told me 20 years ago that I'd ever own a house, I would have told you were really, really messed up. So sobriety for me has been a really, really rocky road in so many ways. I still, some days, don't know how I feel. I still have major problems understanding negative emotions and how to respond correctly to them. You know, I found a structured step study when I had about 13 years. I've been in it ever since. I now call it my home group. And, you know, I spend every day of my week working the steps and putting it on paper and answering questions. And I have to stay in that book. And I know you hear people say all the time that, you know, they'll read something that they've read before and they'll see something new. Every time I go through the steps, I learn so much about myself. You know, it's just been amazing. I don't know how much time I have left. What time did I start? You got 91 years sober. You get up here. So a few of the things I've learned along the way. One, I don't do well unless I stay in a step study. I really don't. I don't do well if I don't make it to a meeting at least every week. It's easy once you get beyond the cravings and all that stuff to just say, oh, I don't need that anymore. You know, I've got it figured out. I still have a thinking problem. I don't have a drinking problem anymore, but I still have a major thinking problem. And you know, every time I go without making it to a meeting, even a little more than a week, the insanity comes back so fast. I mean, I can be insane and go into meetings. Just ask John, you know. He sees me every week. So, you know, I have to stay in this program. I have to work the steps. I have to stay in conscious contact with my higher power. I have to be around you guys. They told me week one, stick with the winners. So, you know, for the last almost 20 years, I have surrounded myself with people in the program. I know a couple of normies, but they're not people I want to spend any time with. I hang with you guys. You guys are the winners, you know. Sometimes we don't feel like winners, but we are. Every day that we show up into a room of Alcoholics Anonymous, we're a winner. And I truly believe that. And, you know, some days I feel like I should stand up and introduce myself as a newcomer because that's how I feel that day, and I feel like I have so much to learn. I pray to God that I'll still be here with 41 years sober someday, like Bob, that I got to meet before the meeting. That's just amazing to me. And, you know, I'm really glad you guys are here because it's you guys that keep me sober. It's real easy to get that little itch that, oh, I don't need it anymore, and I don't want to do that. I've seen too many people. One of the people that my husband went to the Freedom Ranch with, and they would take tokens every year, and I watched this man for 19 years get tokens. He decided to go out and drink last year, and that just really rocked my world. I mean, I hear people going out after, you know, 8, 10, 12 years, but I'd never known someone with 23 years decide to go out and have a drink, and I don't want to be that person. But I know that should something happen, you guys will still be here the next day, you know, and I pray that day never comes, but that's really all I have to share. Thanks.